This is a special episode. I recorded it in English with an English speaking person, and it's one of the special ones. Not to exclude anybody, I'm going on talking in English. Don't worry, you are on the right podcast. You know, working on digital products mostly means focusing on problems, trying to find the right opportunity and deliver value, finding the perfect solution. As simple as that. In many years, though, I've seen a lot of people failing in this apparently easy task. Most of the time, they overlook some aspects of the solution. And the aspect, spoiler alert, is not how beautiful the app looks. I am Carlo Frinolli, and this is Noise About Design. So welcome to the English spoken podcast episode of Noise About Design. We decided to go a little international because either we have a lot of Italian people we listen to and we have a lot of international people we need to listen to. So I decided to give the start of this new season with a guy who's actually a podcast fellow from the Netherlands, and his name is Marc Fontaine. He's a co-founder of 31 Bolts. He's the first service design agency in the Netherlands, am I right?
Yes, but I left the studio 2 years ago, so...
Okay, but you
still co-founder. The co-founder.
So, still true. And now he's running since a lot of time ago. He's gonna tell us about that in a moment. He's running the Service Design Show, which is a video and audio podcast about the value of service design for people. Is it as right? And it's current?
Yes, it's current. Definitely, I would even expand it further. Yes. By the way, ciao, Carlo. Hello, Italian design community. Yes, the Service Design Show is definitely a video YouTube channel. It's a podcast. That's the way it started. Today, I would much rather describe it as a community of service design professionals who really want to take their career to the next level, who are really passionate and looking for support to create and design better services.
Oh, that's awesome, because we have a lot of people between the audience who are actually service designers and they are in need of community, and on the other side they're needing for the next level of their career. So perfect fit, I would say. So tell me more about the evolution and the Service Design Show idea in the very beginning and how it came to be this thing you just described.
Yeah, sure. My pleasure. The Service Design Show started back in 2017, something like that, when I was still part of 31 Volts, the service design agency in the Netherlands that I co-founded. And I was looking for an excuse to talk to people who are way smarter than myself, which isn't that hard, but usually I used to meet those people at conferences, and I thought, well, there must be a better way to connect with them instead of having to travel to each and every conference. So I thought, well, maybe people are open for an interview, and while I'm interviewing them, why not share these conversations with a broader service design community? Back then, there wasn't a podcast on service design. There wasn't a YouTube channel on service design, so that was quite surprising to me. So I thought, well, let's give it a try. I reached out to five people in my first degree network, asked them if they'd like to have an interview with me. And to my surprise, within 2 days, everybody had said yes. And then we were off. The first five episodes were scheduled. And now we're approaching episode 130. So that's how it started. I can tell you more about the evolution, but maybe you already have some questions.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like the idea I had, like, actually 2 years after that. And you were part of my inspiration as your show, because Service Design Show and the Product Breakfast Club podcast from Jake Knapp and Jonathan Curley was actually the couple things that convinced me that it was about time for us in Italy, a couple of years later, of course, but still, we've done it. So we're basically on the same page here. So what were your first five topics in a nutshell? Like, what you covered?
Oh, we covered a lot of ground. I don't know. I don't remember the very first five. I could name a few names, but the topics, I can't recall them. What I can say is that I think that the most interesting conversations with respect to everybody who's been a part of the Service Design Show, for me, are the conversations with people who are on the fringes of our field. So one foot in the service design scene and another foot somewhere else. So people from the research community or people from the visualization community or people from the business design community. I sort of find those conversations most inspiring, interesting. I think service design is a field that steals and borrows from a lot of the other fields, and it's good to sort of broaden, expand your horizon and expand your vocabulary and build bridges between different disciplines. So
I mean, I totally get it. Also, in my experience, the, you know, hybrid episodes were the most interesting to me to be listened to, but also people that gave me feedback about that was very inspiring. What did you learn the most since episode 0 to episode 100 and something right now? Like,
What did I learn? A lot of things.
The top three lessons, let's say.
Yeah, top three lessons. I would say that one is that for me, when doing these interviews and sharing things with a community, one, I realized that there is really a global community. So sometimes when you read articles on Medium or buy a book on service design, you get a pretty narrow perspective because most books are from the US or Europe, and that's not the entire design field. Like, there is a lot of things happening in Asia, Australia, Latin America. So the show really helped me to also open up to that community, which is, I think, very enriching, rewarding. So that would be lesson number one. The second lesson also was that it's all about stories and lived experiences. So in a book, you can read all about the theory, the canvas, the tool, the method, the customer journey map, the persona, whatever, but it doesn't make the same impact as hearing somebody who has actually tried something and then tell you about, okay, this didn't work, this did work, this is what I learned from it. So what I'm trying to do with these conversations and basically with everything I do these days with the community is to extract real life stories from people. Lesson number three, I don't know. I'll think about lesson three. When it pops up, I'll share it.
Yeah, you can also make it up. I mean, nobody can actually test. It's gonna be between you and me, or no, we are recording, so it's not
exactly
as secret as I thought. But anyway, so great. You talked about the Service Design Show also as a community in its evolution. So
yeah,
I have a couple questions here. Like, first, when did you realize that people had this need of like connecting with others other than, you know, you interviewing them and being broadcasted to other people?
Yeah.
Like, what's your epiphany?
Yeah, it took me a while to get to this point. Unfortunately, I wish somebody had told me earlier. So I would say the first 3 years of the Service Design Show were really just about sharing content, sharing conversations, putting stuff out there. And you know that when you put up a podcast or a video, you usually don't get a lot of responses. The only response you usually get is when you meet people at a conference or you get invited somewhere, then you suddenly get people coming up to you and say that they are huge fans and they've listened to everything. So it's quite lonely to put stuff up there, but you know that people are listening. So what I realized is the true value, or sort of the value, gets multiplied when you can get people to debate and discuss around certain topics. And the topics that I'm trying to address are really nuanced. There is a lot of nuance in the things when we talk about, for instance, how to get buy-in into service design, how to spread the message about service design. Like, those are really topics that, sure, there, you can write a book about it, but when you have a conversation with a few people around this topic, it just makes much more impact. So I started experimenting with getting people together around certain things that I think are important within service design, and spark conversations. And well, I would say, to my surprise, it worked even better than I expected. So and that just gave me more confidence to say that the service design show is a community rather than maybe a content publisher. Content publishing is one of the ways we engage with the community, but it's all about the conversations that happen as a result of the things that sort of get put out there.
Yeah, I totally get it. I mean, I get the idea of being lonely posting a content online, not knowing, rather than some metrics and analytics, how it's actually going. But at the same time, I also got a lot of people connecting with me on LinkedIn and say, oh, I listen to everybody, all of your episodes. I tell people listening to others, and yeah, I get the idea also of getting people sharing their point about the value in the stories of service design. Speaking of which, what are the most common answers to what is the value of service design from the people you get together?
So what is the most important value of service design, right? That's your question.
Yeah, and also the most common answers to what is the value of service design, like what you resonate the most in terms of other stories told by people, you know, to me, speaking about that is important for this and that, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I wish there was an easy answer to it. And the easy answer is the value of service design is, sometimes I say there isn't. Service design in itself has no value. It only has value when it's applied. So what I mean with that is you have to have somebody with a problem that can be solved through service design, and then it has value. And it sounds really simple now that I say that, right? A hammer in itself doesn't have any value unless you have a problem that needs to or can be fixed with a hammer. And I think a lot of people in the service design scene struggle with this. They think of all the ways they can explain the value of service design, and it doesn't click, it doesn't resonate. They struggle, they stumble. And usually the problem is that they don't start with the problem. They start with a solution. We have service design, and I want to show you how magnificent it is. So my answer to how do you sort of explain the value of service design is figure out what the problem is of the person you're talking to, and then see if service design is a fit. And then it becomes really easy. Then it becomes super simple to show the value. I'm not sure if that's exactly an answer to your question, but if not, let me know.
No, it is a great starting point. I mean, I'm always struggling myself with this solution-driven approach where people try to put forward their idea of how to fix the problem and didn't really understand what the problem actually was. So one of the quotes I used the most was attributed to Albert Einstein. I don't know if it's true, but whatever, it doesn't matter. Saying that if you have 1 hour, you know, facing a problem, you should spend 50 minutes understanding the problem and then 10 minutes, you know, getting the solution for that. And I think it's very effective because the more time you spend understanding the problem, the easiest is to find a solution to that. I mean, yeah. I'm not saying that fixing problems is easy per se, but it's easier if you understand every single aspect of the problem.
Mm. Yeah, I agree.
So getting back to people, how did they get together? Like, how did it work? What did you do actually?
Yeah.
Like, what was your minimum viable gathering? Mm.
Yeah, sure. I would say the quote-unquote official start for me was a thing which I call these days the campfire. And prior to that, I'll explain what the campfire is in a second. Prior to that, I would maybe say that the conversations happened in a few webinars that I hosted, but that still didn't feel like a true community. So the campfire, it started in May 2020, and it was born out of a need that I was hearing from service designers which I was speaking to, and those were mainly people working in-house as an in-house service designer within a company. And often the story from them was, listen, I'm a team of one or two people in a huge organization. I have great ambitions, but I don't have a lot of decision power. I don't know if I'm actually doing the right thing. So I wish there would be some kind of support group or community or a place where I could make sure that I'm still on the right track. And I was hearing that over and over again, and I thought, okay, let's see if this is actually true. So on a Friday afternoon, sitting in my garden, I thought, we need to get this out today. And I sat down, I wrote an email literally in an hour on a Friday afternoon, and the email said something like, in 4 weeks' time, I'm going to host a weekly session for in-house service designers to share experiences and stories. If you're interested, send in your application by then and then, and see you then. That was like the email. That was the minimum viable campfire. I sent out the email not having too much expectations, but the incentive was really, okay, this isn't going to be positioned as something that we might do. No, we're going to host a campfire and you can apply here. And people signed up, people joined. The first campfire group were 10 participants, and from different companies across the world. We got together 4 or 5 times and people shared their stories. People found it super helpful to have these conversations, to be able to talk about the dirty secrets of service design, to talk about the failures. And after that first campfire group, we did another, I think, 5. We're at campfire round number 6 today. So this is still going on. And I think the pandemic just accelerated the need to connect with people. So yeah, that's part of the story about community.
Yeah, you anticipated a question that I had that was, how do you think the pandemic helped this thing to be get it started, you know? Because, but you just kind of answered already, like.
Well, I can add something to that, because I think the pandemic accelerated it. But to be honest, like, if you're a service designer, no matter if you're in-house or at an agency or freelancing, you're still pioneering. Like, you're still doing something that most people don't understand. And that's hard. Like, if you are always on the forefront and if you always sort of have to be the enthusiastic, excited person, that's challenging. Where do you go with your sort of uncertainties, with your frustrations, with your doubts? Like, there aren't many places to go where you can find people who sort of understand what you're going through. And I think the campfire in this case provides that space. What the pandemic did was it helped to sort of make that virtual connection that everybody was accustomed to. Okay, getting together through Zoom, that's a normal thing. But even without the pandemic, I think the need that we're addressing with this community, it would have been there anyway.
Yeah, I get it. You raised to me another question, which is, how do you think it's gonna change in the next few months, where, you know, the virtual connection are still gonna be there, but probably some more human connection is gonna take place also. Like, do you see it as a, you know, local thing that's gonna scale from place to place, or do you see it still a virtual or some hybrid stuff?
Maybe a hybrid, that would be nice. I can see when this in-house service design community grows that people will meet up at conferences, sort of the live face-to-face conferences. I can imagine small campfires going on in different cities. I do think that the online thing will stay for the reason that it's like, it's super interesting to have people from India, Brazil, Sweden, US, the Netherlands in one group. Like, those kind of connections and hearing those kind of perspectives and stories, that's really valuable. Just hearing that somebody in India is having the same challenges of getting buy-in for service design as somebody in the US, like, it releases some of the pressure, thinking that oh gosh, like, I'm not doing it right, or they are so far ahead. And when you just see that everybody has the same struggles, it really helps. So I think the online aspect and connecting the global community is here to stay. But I would really love to see people also get together when they can physically.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think it's something we need to learn to do yet, because it's we are facing something that really new in our lives. So who knows what's going to be. But yeah, I took a note here to maybe do a couple of these campfires where there are simultaneous events going on, having a little bit of a connection, because a little bit of a background story here. To be honest, we tried in different events to link different location through virtual connection, and it worked so-and-so. It wasn't exciting, like having another speaker on a screen where people were sitting in a room was like not exciting, like not thrilling at all. It was like, yeah, it's okay, but still not there yet. And maybe I'm thinking some campfire when you have some people in a room and some other people in a room and you can have a connection. Mm-hmm. That might be something to test, at least.
So I think the format of the campfire is really important. And we've been iterating and prototyping new things over the last year. And every campfire is different. Every campfire has a new element that we wanted to test. And I think by now I can mention a few things that I think are crucial for creating a deeper connection. So what happens in the campfire is somebody shares a story or a struggle from their life. Now, the rest of the people who aren't sharing, they have a role in that time. So their role is to listen from a place where they can be of service to the storyteller. So usually, like we're doing right now on the podcast, people are listening to the story and then thinking, okay, what does this mean to me? How can I use this? What's interesting? Making notes. The campfire is different. The campfire is, I'm sharing a story, and you, Carlo, are listening in a way that is going to help me. So you're trying to pick up stuff that you can, for instance, give back to me or ask me questions. As a listener, you have an active role to help me as a storyteller. And that flips the entire dynamic in the conversation. And I think that dialogue or that co-creation that happens there is really one of the key elements of the success of the campfire.
Yeah, I get it. I mean, the most frustrating part is usually the thing that the audience is just sit there and doing actually nothing than listening and seeing. And most of the other, you know, brain power is not working at all. Like it's there, you know, just facing it as a, you know, passive users.
Exactly. And we flip that completely around because in our case, we have 8 participants in a campfire. One person is sharing a story. Then you have 7 other experts, quote unquote, who you want to use. And rather than the person who's sharing the story being the expert, he's actually the one who's using the 7 other experts to learn from. And people are there to help. People are there to learn from each other. It's a completely different dynamic than having somebody on a stage presenting answers. Like, you're presenting a story with questions here. Let's figure this out together. That's the mentality.
Yeah, I get it. Until now, did you have any kind of conflictual situation, like people actually quarreling, at least not fighting, having some harsh conversation about what it has been shared, or never?
No, to be honest, I don't remember. I think the reason that doesn't happen is that the people who are listening do it from a perspective of being open, being curious, asking questions rather than judging. There is no judgment. Like, it's your story and I just want to learn more. I just want to ask questions. I want to better understand what's going on here. So there aren't two sides in this setup.
I was mentioning because I was literally yesterday in a work facilitating workshop between 2 companies that were actually fighting before that session. And yesterday was a little difficult to facilitate them. So I needed to put the rule of yes and rather than yes but, because they were actually fighting and conflicting a lot. And I was curious how not to trigger this kind of dynamic between the group, because of course it's really not helping from any constructive criticism or any constructive, you know, insight collection or whatever, you know.
Yeah. It has to do, I think, with the mindset which people have when they enter these conversations. So we do a lot of preparation work, introducing each other, getting to know the people who are there, making sure you understand why somebody is there. And there is also a very tactical thing, and that is helping people to ask powerful questions. So we, through the campfire, you sort of learn, how can I ask questions that, I read the term productive questions. What are productive questions? And I don't think we are skilled enough to ask a lot of productive questions or powerful questions, but that is something that we hold dearly in the campfire and explain what are powerful questions, what are productive questions. And that giving that language is really needed.
Yeah, it's very, very insightful. I mean, isn't it also sort of a user research training, hands-on training for people? Because anyway, you're trying to understand better what the issue the other guys are facing here, so.
Yeah, what one of the previous campers, as we call them, said is, of course, they got a lot of insights for their own situation through sharing. But what they also learned is, how do you actually listen? How do you listen from a from a perspective that you get value out of it, like listening on a different level. And yeah, sure, you can call that user research. Listening is really important in user research. But how do you actually listen? What is it that you listen for? And then how do you get even more, quote unquote, information or knowledge? How do you be more curious? Like, that sounds really vague. Can you actually learn to be more curious? Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I do think so too. It's like drawing, I think. Like, drawing, it is indeed a talent. But the talent is nothing if it's not trained day by day, and to improve it and have a better confidence with the skill itself. Like, you can have it. Of course, you can be better than other at the start. But then, if you don't train it, if you don't exercise it enough, you're just like someone with a talent, but it's nothing.
Totally agree, yeah.
So, and getting back to people's stories, what are the most insightful stories, a couple at least, mm-hmm. you have listened in these campfires right now?
Yeah, so a few things that emerge throughout these conversations. And if people are interested, at the end of every campfire, we record a reflection episode where these campers share some of their insights, so you can watch them on YouTube, and they are also available as a podcast. But one thing that I remember, for instance, is people talk a lot about how do we know if we're making progress. Usually in service design, it's really hard to see, like, if you're actually moving in the right directions. Sometimes the results of your work can take years to actually see them being implemented. So how do you know throughout that period that you're actually doing the right thing? And how do you stay motivated? How do you, if somebody asks you, if your boss or manager or colleague asks you, what did you contribute this month to our company? Like, how do you know what to answer? So conversations around that, around the evidence of your work, the progress of your work, your self-worth tied to your work. Those are things that really often come up and really often sort of stay unanswered, but come up with better questions to figure out what it is.
I see. And question I have, do you plan to write down or release some kind of FAQs or other stuff? If you don't want to give us any spoiler, it's fine, but it's just there.
Yeah. So one thing that's on my mind is to, and I don't know when we're going to release this podcast, and maybe it's already online by the time that people listen to it, but yes, I do plan to bundle these insights, these patterns, these questions into the working title is A Survival Guide for In-House Service Designers. So there is a lot of collective wisdom on these topics, and I thought it would be a really good idea to share it with an even broader community. So keep an eye out for that. If the link is already available, I'll share that with you. And if it isn't, people will have a scoop here in this episode.
Awesome. I really strongly am waiting for that, because the in-house service design is also a topic I want to cover later in a couple minutes. But also, I am giving you a suggestion. Maybe you're going to do it, or maybe you've already done it. I don't know. But it could be cool to have a sort of a collective place, as you called it, which is actually a live thing to be updated from time to time. Because, of course, I'm inferring that you're going to go on with these campfires, so you're going to add other stories. So it could be pretty insightful to have a resource to be listened to.
That was my conclusion as well. So the campfire, when it started, it didn't have a big plan. For me, it was, let's just send out that first email. Let's just do the first campfire. After the second, let's just see if there is a second group. And now we're a year in. So apparently there is a need for something like this in the community. I will continue doing the campfires as long as people keep signing up. So that's great. The evolution of the campfire right now is that I haven't mentioned it, but the campfire is a 6-week, let's call it a program, a 6-week thing. After 6 weeks, it's done. It continues in a Signal group. But people who finished the campfire told me, I want to continue having these conversations. So for those people, we've created like a follow-up, which is called The Circle. And in The Circle, we do just a monthly, you can call it a monthly event, monthly reunion, specifically around a topic that is of interest for in-house service designers, just to keep that place to have these conversations. And tying it back to what your question was, are you going to bundle it? Yes, because I think the thing we're going to do with The Circle, which is a monthly based thing, a lot of insights will come out of that, and I plan to keep updating this quote-unquote survival guide for in-house service designers based on the things we learn through The Circle as well.
Awesome. It's a very, very good idea, and it resonates a lot with ideas that I did have in my mind. So great to know. And I have a curiosity to see if there is really a connection between our kind of initiatives and yours. It's like, do you ever had any need to put out a glossary of what service design, words means?
No, because there is already a very good one by my friend Daniela Catalanato. I hope I'm saying this right, Daniela. So he has already created a service design dictionary or which he's updating. So yeah, if somebody needs that, go check that out.
I am gonna take a look right now, and I put it in the podcast notes because I didn't know, and it's a shame for me that I didn't know. So I'm gonna fix it as soon as possible, and maybe implementing and link it anyway somewhere. So to just to give a little wrap up on the topics we covered already. So campfires is for people that already are doing in-house service design or freelancing or whatever, and needs to share stories, but and they collect their insight and make powerful questions to people, helping them to face the issue that they're raising. And this is something that it's happening like intentionally every week or something like that, I guess, right?
Yeah. So it's a 6-week collaboration between 8 people on every week on Monday, on Wednesday these days, we get together. And what I didn't mention about the campfire, which might be interesting, is when you're doing your day-to-day work, when you're busy, when you're checking off your to-do list, it's really, really hard to slow down and reflect on whether you're going in the right direction. People are just too hard for themselves. There's always something else that needs to get done. So the idea of the campfire isn't revolutionary. Like the thing that I'm doing, facilitating, anybody can do that. But the problem is nobody does it because they're busy doing their work. So now that the campfire is here, you can tell your boss, like, listen, I signed up for this thing. It's in my schedule. And then you have 90 minutes on a weekly basis to actually slow down. Instead of rushing through your to-do list, you now have the time to take a breath, listen to stories, reflect on your work so that the next day you can move forward faster. And I think like making it a to-do item on your list, as counterintuitive as it sounds, like making reflection time a to-do item is really something that is missing in a lot of agendas of people who are busy.
I totally get it and I agree. And my unplanned question here is that aren't we making it worse in these last few months? Like we're overlooking ad space in our daily lives Like, this is something I'm feeling a lot. We discussed also in the preparation call we had in this podcast briefly, but I'm really feeling a lot of, not saying Zoom fatigue, but calendar fatigue, yes. I mean, it's really filling up so much in some, little time.
That's a whole different topic we can go in, but I really believe in doing the hard thinking in a different time than you're doing the hard work. So when you're just in execution mode and production mode and never take a step back to think hard next to working hard, then I think your work eventually will suffer, your mental health will suffer, your physical health will suffer, everything will suffer. So I'm a strong proponent of finding more and taking more time to think and seeing thinking, reflecting also as part of work.
Yeah, I'm realizing more and more that the keyword for me at least here is balance. It's like if you focused only on productive execution work, you're missing a point. If you're working only on the hard thinking part, you're missing, you know, the execution part, and on and on and on. It's like you need to find your own balance.
Yeah, and I agree, balance is a good word here, but it's also like very overused and it's hard to put into practice. What do you mean with balance? For me, it's really simple. Like, just take a look at your schedule. How much time did you take this week to reflect, to rather than thinking about what to do, thinking about what have you done and are these the right things? Where do you want to be heading in the next 3 months? How many walks have you done this week? Like, it's super practical. It's not a fluffy topic that people might think when they hear the word balance. It's really hands-on and tangible.
Yeah, I know, I get it. I feel you also with this fluffy thingy about the balance, but I didn't come up with a better word. But maybe I have a better practice to put in, you know, on the ground doing it. My personal spoiler is that I didn't, at least in the last couple of weeks, I didn't take any time to do it. Any of this stuff. So
and this comes back to your Einstein quote that you used in the episode. Like, if Einstein says that you need to spend 55 or that he spends 55 minutes figuring out what the real problem is and 5 minutes on execution, I think if we have 5 minutes where people or five minutes where people spend thinking, that's a lot. Like, leave alone the 55 minutes thinking, if people spend 5 minutes thinking about what to do, that these days, yeah, it's a lot. I don't think that's a really smart way to be doing our work.
Yeah, I totally get it. So, campfires and circle, getting back to the initial topic, are there to help people connecting with others and understand their issues from different angles, from productive questions and so on. But are there any other ways we can both tell the others the value of service design and help in our service designers and people to thrive and to have better lives in their work experience?
And I would say the simple answer is be as interested in the people you're working with as the people you're working for. So if you have end users, if we think about customers, we as service designers always praise ourselves that we are so customer centric, that we do everything to understand the user. We are the user's advocate. But how much time do you actually spend understanding the person you're working with? So what are the pains and needs of your manager, of your boss, of your colleague? I think if you want to be more successful and thrive as a service designer, whether you're in-house or maybe at an agency, it doesn't really matter. Use your skills that you already have to understand the people you're working with And when you do that, you'll see that it's much easier to actually create partnerships rather than becoming siloed. Like, you're working together, you're working towards a goal. And when you understand that and you can help people achieve that goal, then your life will be so much easier.
Yeah, this is something, again, that resonates a lot. In the last few months, we run a couple of service design projects for utility companies. I was mentioning in the preparation call, and what came up was we are working in silos. We are doing processes because it's always been like that. We are not happy about that, and blah blah. It's so predictable that it's more than a pattern from companies. And when you break these boundaries in the silos, it's a little easier. I mean, I'm not selling anything that says if you work outside the silos, everything is going to be magic and glittering and everything is going to work. It's not like that, but it's way better.
But this is also like breaking down silos and working cross departments. We hear that so much, but how do you actually do that? I think people lack the tangible practice. And I think it's as simple as, and at the same time as hard as, taking the time to ask questions to the people you're working with, learning from them, being curious about what they do, rather than just being focused on the things you want to achieve. So rather than only chasing your goals, understanding that if you understand the people who are next to you, you'll be able to chase your goals or to get to your goals much quicker. And having that realization, again, taking a step back, breathing, having those conversations, that's the way to break down silos in a very practical way.
Yeah, I get it. I totally get it. So I think I have all the topic covering I wanted to have. I have one last question for you, which is, what is the most surprising story you listened to in these years, or also in these campfires, like the one that you didn't expect coming, and they give you the, you know, most insightful realization?
That's a hard question. That's a good question. I'm going to give an answer, but I don't know if that would be my answer the next day. But what comes up right now is that I see a lot of people who are unhappy with the work they do. They are currently in a situation that doesn't make them happy, in an environment that doesn't support them. They are so passionate about doing good things for the world, but whatever reason, they're not able to put their talent into practice. And a lot of people who have been through the campfire have quit their job or have moved their job. And I'm not sure if the campfire is contributing to that, or if it's giving them the confidence to see, hey, it's also, it doesn't have to be this way. So the stories that I'm hearing about people being unhappy and then taking action and transitioning to a different position, which allows them to put their talent into practice, to live up to their full potential, is something that I keep hearing about. And I love these sort of transformational stories.
Yeah, I mean, I have a lot of friends that are actually in the field that from time to time, they're very unhappy on how it's working, but they're not leaving their job because, of course, family and this and that and so on. But at some point, they might need a different point of view to say it doesn't have to be like that. It doesn't have to be that painful. It could be different. And it's worth a try.
And it helps when you see people who aren't in that situation, that you see that there is hope.
Yeah. So, perfect. I mean, I totally get it. So, Mark, wrapping up this episode, I would ask you to give us all the links for people listening to this podcast to join the campfires and the circle. So I'm going to put it in the podcast notes of these episodes. And hopefully at some point we're going to connect some kind of initiative we are going to do here with yours to have a broader, you know, confrontation with people also from here. Luckily enough, we do have some of the people following us. So let's say let's connect later on this year. I mean, this is going to be online in maybe it's going to be, you know, the first episode of season two or whatever. I'm not going to spoiler anything here, but let's see.
Sure.
Let's see. So, Mark, thank you so much for your time and your availability for this podcast and being part of this episode. Thank you again for being such a wonderful speaker at the World Disability Day a couple of years ago. And see you and talk to you very, very soon.
Sure. Was my pleasure. Anytime, Carlo.
Per questo podcast è tutto. Se vi è piaciuto, magari potete condividerlo con qualche persona che vi sta a cuore, oppure della vostra rete, o della mia, o con chi vi pare, insomma. Se invece volete seguirci, potete farlo sul nostro sito, noise.it, sul nostro blog, noise.it/blog, oppure sul canale Telegram, in cui condividiamo delle cose in anteprima. Noise About Design, si chiama. Oppure su tutti gli altri social di Noise. Tendenzialmente ci trovate come Noise o We Are Noise. Se invece volete seguire me, potete farlo su LinkedIn. Altrimenti ci vediamo in giro, perché si può uscire adesso, no?